Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
And welcome to Adventures in History. I'm Alana Quila, here with Mac Burns, and a very happy new year again.
Again, because, you know, we didn't really talk about it last week because we had a guest. So we just kind of glossed over.
It feels more like the new year now.
It does.
For some reason.
Because we're a week in and anarchy has not happened. A meteorite has not hit us.
And the Monday after the holiday week and everything. So, we've had a full week now. So,
although I was amused, I used the joke I saw somewhere, hindsight is 2020. And that's going to be a good one for a while.
Yes.
But my wife just used on me the I avoided this like the plague. I kind of did.
So. That was good. And you had a big party, big festivities.
Huge party. Yep. There are two of us.
Yep, there were three of us. One was sleeping, but we made it to the 9 o'clock party, and we went outside. We had our noisemakers and everything, and so did the neighbors. It was great. It's nice to live in a neighborhood with little kids.
That's great.
Yeah,
you fooled her into looking at New York time, East Coast time, and saying that that's the end of the day.
And now we're just like well into January, so we're embracing this.
That's right.
2021.
2021. Have you written a check yet and done it wrong?
I have not, no.
See, I never do that. Sometimes I'll type wrong just because you're right. Automatic and you're not thinking, you're just typing. But all right, shall we get to it? This is going to be our first hodgepodge show.
I love it.
We got some things we got to catch up on since we had a guest and things we mentioned so we need to follow up on.
Best ever.
Best show ever. Okay, so let's see. We discussed last time this day in history.
Yep.
And since it's Sunday night... We have decided this is a monumental shift. We're doing this day tomorrow in history. So at the water cooler, if those things exist.
Now you're ready.
At your bar trivia nights.
Yes.
At your Zoom meetings. If you want to sound really smart, you can take notes.
Well, I think we dutifully concluded that really when this show airs on Sunday night, people aren't headed out afterwards to go
That's
to
right.
the bar. So... You know, we're here for your best interest.
That's right. We want you to win money.
Exactly.
And if you are ever on Jeopardy, you do need to cut us in.
There you go. So it's Monday, folks. Monday.
Yeah. So this is tomorrow. Things that happen on January 11th.
There we go.
1908. Theodore Roosevelt makes the Grand Canyon a national monument.
Is he your number one?
Theodore?
Yeah.
No, because I always... Lincoln or Washington.
Okay.
They go back and forth. Sometimes one's one, sometimes the other's two, and then they flip. But TR's in my top five.
Okay.
I love Teddy.
Yeah, that's a great one.
All right, 1927. Louis B. Mayer, head of film studio MGM, announces the creation of the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences. The Academy.
Yeah.
The Oscars.
How exciting. What year was that?
1927.
Okay.
And the Academy is actually building a huge museum. I've been on their email list for a while and watching the progress because, we kind of have a film museum up here.
Mm-hmm.
And theirs has been lacking.
Oh, interesting.
So they've got like Tom Hanks and other people and they're raising like $400 million.
Oh.
So it'll be a little bigger than ours.
Sure.
A little better. A little bigger. Not that much better though.
There you go. Yes.
So, and I don't think they have a filmmaker experience in theirs.
Okay. Well,
I mean, their plan.
And theirs isn't in the same city where the Goonies was filmed.
Well, of course not.
So.
Okay. 1928, Stalin banishes Trotsky. So last year when I went to the East Coast, I spent some time in D.C., we went to the Spy Museum.
Right.
Highly recommend it. The pickaxe that they buried in Trotsky's head is on exhibit.
Oh, my gosh. And that stuck with you.
It stuck with me. Oh, my gosh. No, thank goodness it didn't. It was one of the highlights of the experience, actually, because there's a lot of gadgets and things that I didn't really remember that story or this story. So the things that I did know the stories of to see it, that was stupidly exciting.
Yeah.
So on this day, Trotsky just gets banished.
Okay.
It doesn't end well for him.
Right.
Spoiler alert. 1964, The U.S. Surgeon General announces definitive link between smoking and cancer.
Hmm. Yep.
That was almost going to be my history highlight of the day.
It's a big one.
And it's hard for I think, us. I will go ahead and make that leap and yes. speak for you at the moment, mm-hmm. but feel free to disagree. Because we didn't live through that naming of it and then the countersuits and all of the suppression of information. I mean, to us, we look at that going, duh.
For sure.
Of yep. course.
I mean, major campaigns out, right, when we were going. I mean, we just didn't see the advertising for it. Like yeah. people saw, we saw advertising.
And all the controversy over the studies and the cigarette companies trying to suppress that information. And
yeah.
So, I mean, to me, it's just like, well, yeah, of course. I was actually going to like have some like, and similar news, you know, driving without a seatbelt and getting in an accident is bad.
The Insider yeah. is one of Mark's favorite movies. He's watched it over and over, along with JFK. Yeah. That's probably his top one.
JFK, really?
Yes. Loves it.
I'm going to have to take him to task.
He loves a good conspiracy theory.
The Insider, though, that's a good one. All right. 1973, in a history lowlight, American League in baseball adopts the designated hitter rule.
Oh, okay.
I'm a you know, yeah. the natural, and you can't have the DH.
Yeah.
2020. Your eyes just got big when yeah. I said 2020. Diego, the giant 100-year-old tortoise, retires to the Galapagos Islands after his high libido is credited with saving his species.
Wow, what's that aftershave you're wearing?
Oh my goodness.
I remember seeing this in the news.
This is about the quirkiest this day in history ever. And it's not really history, Mac.
Well, it's a year ago.
That doesn't count. A year?
It doesn't count.
No.
When does it become history?
20 years.
20?
I think.
So you're like an antique car.
There we go.
A car only is classified as antique at 20. And then houses, I think it's 50.
Okay.
So you're if it's not 20 years, it's not.
I think a year makes it interesting.
I remember reading this article, though, and thinking, wow, because he fathered like 100 turtles or something, and the species was endangered, and he was like one of the only males in captivity, and the ones that didn't have any interest, and he did.
There we go. Well.
But our history highlight of the day, the thing that had the most impact on history, 1922, insulin is first used on humans to treat diabetes. And the first person is a Canadian named Leonard Thompson, age 14.
Oh, my goodness.
I always think diabetes is kind of an older thing.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Thank goodness for all the people with diabetes, insulin.
Huge. Yeah, that is a good one. I had a couple. You missed one of your presidents. 1948, President Harry Truman proposes free 2-year community colleges for all who want it.
Wow. Way to go.
So it's just a proposal, obviously.
It doesn't go anywhere because Congress hated him.
Right. But I thought that was kind of interesting. That seems a little before his time, 1948.
Yeah.
1980, Honda announces it will build the first Japanese-owned passenger car assembly plant in Ohio, in the United States, and it's in Ohio.
Wow. And it was Honda.
Yeah. Also 1980. So, and then this day in history, Alexander Hamilton.
Oh.
Who then went on to become a singing sensation.
Don't get me going.
He rewrote the story. The story's the same, similar.
I've refused to watch it.
Oh, you have?
I
okay,
have.
Interesting.
My family is very annoyed with me.
Because they love it, right?
Because, yeah, and they're all of them are liking the music and yep. sing along. And
My 5-year-old can sing the songs. She hasn't seen the movie. It's very catchy.
I mean, I'm glad people are interested in history, but I am just suspicious as a musical.
Well, sure. I mean, I think they definitely, you get to take some license with entertainment, right? You don't have to retell the story exactly.
I would say so.
Yes.
I'm okay. I had to think about that.
Yeah.
Like if I wanted to go on a ramp, a soapbox, but no, you are correct. I think sometimes a story is so broad or has so many characters or so many aspects that, yes. Film, television, a little less on books, but live performances, yes, I think you can take some liberties.
For sure.
As long as you don't portray it as this is factual, 100% on board.
Yes. No, I agree with that. And like you said, too, I think more people are interested, right?
Yes. And that's never a bad thing.
Right.
So actually, speaking of that, because somebody commented to me, I made reference last week to a thing that I'd seen about turn of the century horses versus cars.
Mm-hmm.
And I dug this out, and I'm embarrassed to say, I don't know where I got it from.
Oh.
It was because I've had it for about 10 years.
Interesting.
But I thought because somebody was asking me, and I did, I went ahead and sent it to them, but I thought if that person was interested, perhaps others are as well.
There we go.
When the world was lurching into the modern era, it grew magnificently more populous and in a hurry. Most of this expansion took place in urban centers like London, Paris, New York, and Chicago. In the United States alone, cities grew by 30 million residents during the 19th century, with half of that gain in just the final 20 years.
But as this swarm of humanity moved itself and its goods from place to place, a problem emerged. The main mode of transportation produced a slew of the byproducts that economists call negative externalities, including gridlock, high insurance costs, and far too many traffic fatalities. Crops that would have landed on a family's dinner table were sometimes converted into fuel, driving up food prices and causing shortages. Then there were the air pollutants and toxic emissions endangering the environment as well as individuals' health. We're talking about the automobile, aren't we?
No, we're not. We're talking about the horse. See, I love that because everything about that sounds like it's cars.
Yes.
The horse, a versatile and powerful helpmate since the days of antiquity, was put to work in many ways as modern cities expanded, pulling streetcars and private coaches, hauling construction materials, unloading freight from ships and trains, even powering the machines that turned out furniture, rope, beer, and clothing. If your young daughter took gravely ill, the doctor rushed to your home on horseback. When a fire broke out, a team of horses charged through the streets with a pumping truck. At the turn of the 20th century, some 200,000 horses lived and worked in New York City, or one for every 17 people.
But oh, the troubles they caused. Horse-drawn wagons clogged the streets terribly, and when a horse broke down, it was often put to death on the spot. This caused further delays. Many stable owners held life insurance policies that, to guard against fraud, stipulated the animal be euthanized by a third party. This meant waiting for the police, a veterinarian, or even the ASPCA to arrive. Even death didn't end the gridlock. Dead horses were extremely unwieldy, writes the transportation scholar Eric Morris. As a result, street cleaners often waited for the corpses to petrify so they could more easily be sawed into pieces and carted off.
Oh, that's disgusting.
That's awful.
Yeah, that's not right. The noise from iron wagon wheels and horseshoes was so disturbing, it reportedly caused widespread nervous disorders that some cities banned horse traffic on the streets around hospitals and other sensitive areas. And it was frighteningly easy to be struck down by a horse or wagon, neither of which is as easy to control as they appear in the movies, especially on slick, crowded city streets. In 1900, horse accidents claimed the lives of 200 New Yorkers, or one of every 17,000 residents. In 2007, meanwhile, 274 New Yorkers died in auto accidents, or one of every 30,000 residents. So one of 17,000 for horses.
Wow.
And 100 years later, one of every 30,000 residents by cars. This means that a New Yorker was nearly twice as likely to die from a horse accident in 1900 than from a car accident 30 years ago.
Maybe some other things to that, too.
Maybe.
Worst of all, this is really great for radio. Worst of all was the dung. The average horse produced about 24 pounds of manure a day. With 200,000 horses, that's nearly 5 million pounds of horse manure a day. Where did it go? Decades earlier, when horses were less plentiful in cities, there was a smooth functioning market for manure, with farmers buying it to truck off via horse, of course, to their fields. But as the urban equine population exploded, there was a massive glut. In vacant lots, horse manure was piled as high as 60 feet.
Oh.
It lined city streets like banks of snow. In the summertime, it stank to the heavens. When the rains came, a soupy stream of horse manure flooded the crosswalks and seeped into people's basements. Today, when you admire old New York brownstones and their elegant stoops rising from the street level to the second-story parlor, keep in mind this was a design necessity, allowing the homeowner to rise above the sea of horse manure.
You know, that whole litany that you just said, what made it real was like snowbanks. Because I've
dirty snowbanks.
I've lived in upstate New York and Vermont where we had 2 and 3 foot, 4 foot snowbanks from plows. And I can't picture, well, I can, that's the unfortunate thing. Picture that all being horse manure instead of snow.
And your shoes, just think of, yeah.
All of this dung was terrifically unhealthy. Well, duh. Yeah. And smoking leads to, it was a breeding ground for billions of flies that spread a host of deadly diseases. Rats and other vermin swarmed the mountains of manure to pick out undigested oats and other horse feed. Crops that were becoming more costly for human consumption thanks to higher horse demand. No one at the time was worried about global warming, but if they had been, the horse would have been public enemy number one, for its manure emits methane, a powerful greenhouse gas.
In 1898, New York hosted the first international urban planning conference. The agenda was dominated by, you guessed it, horse manure, because cities around the world were experiencing the same crisis. But no solution could be found. Stumped by the crisis, writes Eric Morris, the Urban Planning Conference declared its work fruitless and broke up in 3 days instead of the scheduled 10. The world had seemingly reached the point where its largest cities could not survive without it, and they couldn't survive with it either.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you know, urban planners, and we had the city.
Yep, we should have asked her.
Community Development Director, we should have. I wonder if she knows about this conference.
Right.
So, and then the problem suddenly vanished. It was neither government fiat nor divine intervention that did the trick. City dwellers did not rise up in some mass movement of altruism or self-restraint, surrendering all the benefits of horsepower. The problem was solved by technological innovation. The horse was kicked to the curb by the electric streetcar and the automobile, both of which were extravagantly cleaner and far more efficient. The automobile, cheaper to own and operate than a horse-drawn vehicle, was proclaimed an environmental savior. Cities around the world were able to take a deep breath without holding their noses at last and resume their march of progress.
That's so funny. I think it's really interesting that it's cheaper.
At the time, they thought it was cheaper and I just love the better for the environment.
Right.
That made me laugh. And that's, I think, why I saved that, because it was just so funny to me. That, you know, here we're like, how can we bike ride more and how can we walk instead of driving our cars? And 100 years ago, it was all about how can we get rid of these horses and drive these cars instead.
I think the lesson is we just go forward and instead of trying to figure out how to make it all work together. That's why we have great urban planners. Like,
that's right.
Like the one we had in last week, right? That's what she tries to do.
Although I can't imagine going to a 3-day conference or 7-day conference to talk about horse manure.
No. And not agreeing on anything.
Yeah, and we can't even come to an agreement.
Nothing. You just leave. don't even go for day four.
On the wonderful topic of horse manure, should we take a little break?
And that sounds good.
That way we can cleanse the palate and move on to something better.
Sounds good.
January 1926, you're invited in. The tempting baked goods in our show windows are only a promise of the big variety of delicious things inside. Here you will find a complete variety of baked goods, everything from tender, tempting bread to the fanciest of pastries. Individual attention given to special orders. Morrow's Bakery, phone 495.
January 10th, 1884, St. Mary's Hospital, Astoria, Oregon. This institution, under care of the Sisters of Charity, is now ready for the reception of patients. Private rooms for the accommodation, if any desire them. Patients admitted at all hours, day or night. No physician has exclusive right, and every patient is free to and has the privilege of employing any physician they prefer.
And welcome back to Adventures in History. I'm Alana Quila with Providence Seaside Hospital, here today with Mac Burns, Clatsop County Historical Society.
Broadcasting from an undisclosed, hidden location.
Yes.
Not a bunker. But
it's deep in history.
Deep in history and hidden in Clatsop County.
Hidden for now.
Yes.
Only because it's closed.
So, we are in winter hours.
Correct. Yes.
Because last week we had a guest, and we didn't really talk about New Year's Eve at all.
Yep.
I've had this idea, and I don't know if I've ever shared it before, and I have to say I didn't 100% come up with it myself because I think it came up while numerous people were talking. But I have scoured the internet to make my case that on New Year's Eve, we should do something here in Clatsop County truly amazing that might garner us some media attention. We should drop from the Astoria column a giant, and I don't care what it's made out of. It could be made out of silver. It could be made out of paper mache. It needs to be lit up, but we need to drop a giant salmon like they do in New York City, the Times Square, the big ball.
And you have a location.
At the column.
Right. There's already a camera up there.
That's right. And you can see it from numerous places. You don't have to go up there.
Right.
And to make my case that there are other things that are dropped. Like I said, I've scoured the internet.
Okay.
So we figured we'd share a few of these with you as inspiration. So county commissioners and city council, if you're listening, great ideas. And I don't even need to own this one.
And you have an entire year. A little less.
That's right.
To plan for it.
Jeff Daly, you can take this on.
Yep. Take it on now.
Other more creative people than me. I just want this to happen. So I don't need to be the historical society doing this. Somebody else can do this.
Those are the best ideas.
And fund it. I'm giving this one away to the community. So Spencer is a giant stuffed possum lowered from the sky every year in Tallapoosa, Georgia. The event is the centerpiece of a night full of celebrations in the small West Georgia community. Tallapoosa was once called Possum Snout. I'm glad they changed the name.
Yeah, I think so.
Which is likely where the marsupial reference comes in. Another small southern town, Brasstown, North Carolina, also does a New York Eve possum drop, but in a more frightening manner. They use a live possum in a plexiglass case.
That does sound terrifying.
And I don't think they actually used a plexiglass case until the last decade or so.
Oh my goodness.
I think they actually dropped them.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yes. Even a possum, which I have to admit is kind of an ugly creature.
But still.
Yes.
Okay.
But no, you don't need to be dropping live possums, even in a plexiglass case.
No. Since New Year's 1996, the city of Lebanon, Pennsylvania, has dropped a 200-pound slab of bologna at the strike of midnight. Lebanon is the home of the Lebanon Bologna. Cheryl Batdorf, president of the Community of Lebanon Association, explained, "But fear not, the delicious lunch meat does not go to waste. After the drop each year, the bologna is given to charity."
And we'll go on record now. The Clatsop County Historical Society does not need to get the 200-pound bologna as a gift. They can pass it on to some other charity.
There you go.
Eastover, North Carolina, the flea drop is not a regional brand of flea dip for cats or dogs. Instead, it's an actual annual tradition started at the town's incorporation in 2010. Seems new. Locals learned that the city used to be called Flea Hill. Again, good change in names.
Yes.
So they felt a huge flea replica would be a fitting tribute. At 3 feet tall and 30 pounds, this flea is not something you'd want to find in your carpet or on your pet, which is maybe why Eastover shoots off a replica 1861 cannon once the flea hits the ground at midnight. It seems an odd combination of things.
It does.
But I like them embracing the giant flea.
It's funny. In Key West, Florida, the annual tradition is to drop a drag queen named Sushi from a huge glittering high heel shoe. Sushi's given name, Gary Marion, has been performing the drag queen drop since 1996. He told CNN, they said, "We have an idea. Let's do a shoe drop. We made the shoe for you. Now you've got to sit in it for New Year's Eve." And I said, "Okay." And that's just how it started. In 2015, Marion married his longtime partner just before the high heel dropped in to ring the new year.
You know, if they're going to make you a giant high heel, you got to kind of have to say yes.
Yes. I've been in Key West for New Year's Eve before when I went to college in Miami. I do not recall seeing Gary or the high heel at all. So obviously we were elsewhere.
You need to go back.
I mean, and it's a tiny, you know, it's like an 8x8 little town. I mean, 8 miles squared. So
you think you would have heard about it if they were doing it when you were there.
I know.
Okay. So peeps.
Okay.
You either love them or you hate them. Mm. I'm on the hate list. Where are you?
I just don't even eat them. Carly loves them. Mark loves them. There we go.
So you're on the indifferent list.
Yes.
Okay. Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, they love them. Peeps are made by the Bethlehem-based Just Born Quality Confections. And every New Year's Eve, an 85-pound, 4.5-foot peep descends from the sky, the culmination of a 2-day celebration of the marshmallow confection known as Peeps Fest.
Interesting.
I would like to attend Peeps Fest, even though I hate peeps. And then I'd like to know if they put the 85-pound peep into a microwave.
Ugh.
Because that is the only even remotely attractive thing about the peeps, is watching them in a microwave.
Oh, really? Okay.
You'll have to attempt that.
There we go.
If you have not.
Known as the Up the Cup New Year's Eve celebration, those in Savannah, Georgia, bring in January 1 by dropping a 6-foot-tall to-go cup. The tradition is a relatively new one. It was started in 2013, but it draws a larger and larger crowd each year. The to-go cup is a reference to Savannah's law that permits adults to drink alcohol in the city streets so long as the booze is in a to-go cup. I love that.
I was kind of thinking that one's lame until the very end. But then I get it. Okay. The town of Easton, Maryland, ushers in every new year by dropping an oversized crab replica from 25 feet in the air. The crab measures about 6 feet wide and has been an Easton tradition since 2004. The island of Bermuda inspired those who started this unusual ritual. There, a giant onion is dropped on New Year's Eve. Easton's crab drops twice on the big day, once at 9 p.m. for early risers and again at midnight for night owls.
Meaning those with children.
That's right.
Yes. In 2007, the small town of Vincennes, Indiana, I'm sure I did not say that correctly, started dropping watermelons on New Year's Eve. As the seat of Knox County, the city and the surrounding area contain more than 7,000 acres of watermelon fields. An 18-foot watermelon replica is raised high into the air every December 31st, and at midnight, 18 watermelons drop from it. Sounds messy.
Okay, I'm digging that one.
Yeah, that's a fun one.
Because they get two of them. They get the giant watermelon, which is just funny, because anytime you make a giant something, it's funny.
Yeah.
And then the fact that they drop 18, I'd love to know how they get that number. Yeah, 18. And I'm reminded when I fell in love with David Letterman, back when he was on NBC, Late Night with David Letterman, he used to throw stuff off of like a 4-story tower, and watermelons were one of the things he'd throw, and it just made me laugh as a kid. So I'm digging that one. I might have to spend New Year's in Vincennes, or however you pronounce that, Indiana. Yes. The wrench drop is the way Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania says Happy New Year. Started in 2003 as an Eagle Scout project, the drop has since gained national recognition. The area was originally settled in the 19th century by mechanics looking to set up shop in order to fix westward headed wagon trains. The wrench drop is an homage to this unique past.
They don't say what, so they must drop wrenches. Okay. Mount Olive, North Carolina. Or actually, we're not even going to go into Mount Olive. We're going to deep tease that one.
Deep tease.
Because we're running out of time, coming to the end of it. But it was a great New Year. We had a good time. Yeah. So you're looking.
I was just going to say quickly, you know, of course, Idaho is the big potato. And I thought you were going to say, and Atlanta has the big peach.
Oh, there you go.
But once again, we could have the big salmon.
Big salmon.
And then somewhere, I don't say two morons, just one moron and a wonderful professional co-host could be talking about what they do in the Clatsop County Astoria.
I love it. Yeah.
That those idiots drop a big giant salmon.
And we convince them to do it.
That's right.
It sounds so great.
That's a plan. Well, Next week, we got a great guest.
We do. Yep, it's going to be great. And thank you. We hope you all are enjoying this January with us. Thanks for joining us on KMUN. And we will see you in a week.
Go make some history.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.